If we reduce evangelization to something you can just train someone for, just a set of skills or a technique for saying something, we reduce evangelization to the manipulation of human techniques.
Hello, and welcome back to Religion to Reality, where this week we're going to be talking about evangelization, from personal barriers in sharing the faith to professional approaches to the idea. I'm your host, Dave Plisky, joined by my friend and co-host, as always, Father John Grbowicz. One of the most interesting things that we found in our study was that while many Catholics have a degree of comfort in sharing their faith, there's more hesitancy when it comes to actually being proactive about doing so. Common barriers included things like lack of experience or just plain lack of confidence. Today, we wanted to look into some of those barriers and how maybe they can be overcome. John, I know evangelization is your all-time favorite word.
Wow. All right. We're going there. Okay.
Why not? Let's just, what is it about it that turns you off? The word, that is.
Probably because it's been overused and I don't know what it really ultimately means anymore. And I don't really know what its goal is other than what people are constantly saying. It's proclaiming the good news. It's introducing people to Jesus or something along those lines. I mean, I get it. I understand it. I know there's been lots of evangelization programs that I've experienced, that I've helped put together, that I get it. There's just something about it, though, that just rubs me the wrong way anymore, because it seems like we're at a time right now in, if you want to say, the time of the world, where there needs to be some other way of doing things than the way that we've been doing them. And I feel that evangelization seems to have these very clear, let's just say, guidelines, which is about doing whatever we can to present the gospel within the context of the doctrine of, say, the church. And that's a very good project, but I think something else has to emerge that is not necessarily about getting people to become Catholic per se. There needs to be almost what I would think call a pre-evangelization that takes priority over evangelization. And it's what we've been talking about so much on this podcast. It's so much caught up in the whole, you know, realm of listening proactively, hearing what people are saying and hearing it well. I think that if we really believe that the Spirit is working at all the time in the world, and even in the church, it really requires us to broaden our expectations that we place on trying to lead people down a particular journey. And I know that's risky because it sounds like it's almost kind of undermining the doctrine or undermining the need to make people Catholic, let's say, or help them to become Catholic. But I don't think so. I think that there's something far greater incarnationally, sacramentally taking place. And I don't know if the word evangelization is really getting at that.
You're absolutely right. And your words are, I'm once again drawn to the figure of Marshall McLuhan, who was obsessed with this idea. I shouldn't say obsessed. He made famous this idea, the medium is the message. And when it comes down to it, that's more present and tangible and accessible in Jesus Christ than anywhere else. Because in Jesus, literally, we have the person of God made man. So now in the incarnation, you don't need to know anything else about Jesus other than the fact that he literally is God while he is man. How much clearer could the medium be the message than in the person of Jesus Christ? And I think that's what you're saying, right? And maybe that even is a later stage in the conversation for some people, of course, but we get wrapped up around this doctrine or that one, you know, when in actuality, what evangelization is seeking to do is to establish a relationship for this person with God. And that can get so muddied so quickly when someone comes into this with an agenda of whatever they might exactly be trying to accomplish with someone.
I think you're exactly right. I mean, the medium is the message is exactly the incarnation, right? I mean,
exactly.
So I think that it's such a profound statement because it's an incarnational statement in so many ways. I use that whole term with my film class, you know, that, you know, we know that we expect a certain type of reaction when we go to see a film because we understand the medium of film and what it's capable of doing. The content, in a certain sense, is secondary to what the film is capable of doing, just with cameras and lighting and all the other things that we expect film to be. So it's the same thing for all of us in our encounter with really each other. I mean, we expect a certain type of greatness with each person, which is why we get so frustrated when people aren't their best selves or not treating us the way that we want to be treated. So we really had that expectation of greatness, for lack of a better word. And I think that that's placed on our hearts, and that's really the incarnation in action. And so I think McLuhan was very keen to say that, because I think it's a way for us to be able to understand really what we're, who we're made for, what we're made for, whose we are, all those things.
No, you're right. You know, anytime we zoom into any particular instance of something, whether it be a film or even a person, we're going a little too close to paying attention to what McLuhan would call the figure, as opposed to the ground. Actually, that's Gestalt psychology that he's kind of analyzing there. But this idea that, look, you know, any one instance of a thing is not going to tell you how culturally that thing is changing, or how everyone is interpreting this thing and living their lives differently as a result. So yeah, amen to that. For today's episode, we spoke with three guests who all have different experiences in evangelization, from personal ministry to business experience. First up is Monica Martinez, the parish lead at Hallow, that chart-topping Catholic prayer app. Monica is someone we actually heard from on the prayer episode, which was episode 2 previously. This time we spoke with Monica about her own experiences working in evangelization. What have been your experiences with evangelization efforts, let's say in your own community? I know that you've worked in it professionally for a number of years. I don't think anyone that works in evangelization isn't doing it themselves or involved in some way beyond, you know, professionally. So just curious about your own story.
It's really interesting when you do work in ministry evangelization, because you can't help but sort of always be looking and seeing what's happening and have opinions and things. But one of the things I've noticed, and not recently anymore, you know, COVID was like a blip. It was 3 years. You're just sort of like, I guess I've been back for a few years, but I'm noticing in my community, you know, a lot more efforts for welcoming. You know, there's a lot more efforts around relationship and hospitality. Those are really big things. You know, one of the things, so at my parish, and this was before I moved back here, but at my parish, they had won the best place to worship in our city. So that was pretty cool. One of the things that I noticed at my parish, and you know, in terms of efforts for evangelization, after Mass, our director of evangelization, every Mass, after it's concluded, he'll stand up and he'll say, "Hey, is there anybody new joining us today?" And people will raise their hands, or people will nudge other people, "Hey, raise your hand." And then I'll ask them, "Where are you coming from?" And you know, sometimes it's from a city not too far. Sometimes it's from out of state. But I love it. He always says, "Hey, well, we're so glad that you're here. You know, you could have gone anywhere, but we're so glad that you've come to pray with us today, to worship with us, and we hope you come back." And it's like those little gestures. You know, he doesn't have to say anything. We don't know if they're going to come back, but just to actually, you know. So I'm seeing that more and more. And of course, you see like the Net Ministries, Alpha Rescue Project. A lot more efforts, I think, in evangelization are sort of taking place. So that's what I'm noticing.
That's great. And you said that's all kind of post-COVID. Was that the catalyzing factor? Was like, we got to get people back here? Or like, why the difference?
That's a really good question. Again, I came in after they had already started that. So I don't know what their catalyzing moment, but I do think that, yeah, COVID, just in my, you know, again, putting the work hat on and speaking with all these parishes from across the country, did have a huge impact. It probably, you know, expedited what was already happening in the church, you know, in terms of engagement and people actually being a part of it. So I think so. I think it was just one of those like, wow, this is a reality check. We really need to figure out how to bring people back who were with us, or maybe bring new people in who have never been with us before.
One of the things I've encountered in my own life when it comes to inviting people into the church is the realization that the Mass, while it is source and summit, you know, with the Eucharist, is just too complex and too insider for it to be a good first point of entry for it, for really anyone that doesn't know what's really going on. It's like, yes, I had a Mormon friend in high school who would go to Catholic Mass also, just because she found it so beautiful. She would like cry every time. So clearly for someone like that, it's connecting. even without maybe a full understanding of, you know, the formation you would want around understanding the Mass. But for most people, it's just like, I don't understand what's happening. This is boring. Why am I here? And I'm not trying to talk badly about the Eucharist in that way. I'm just, this is the reality of the experience for outsiders a lot of the time. And so I just wonder if there's a way, if you think that there's a way for the Eucharist to be presented in a way that invites people rather than overwhelms them. And I know sometimes this can be adoration, or is that just like too high of stakes to, you know, is it always the wrong point of entry for folks?
Yeah, I think this is the question that the church has been asking for the past few years. You know, it's the impetus behind the Eucharistic revival, those, you know, CARA research, Pew research that showed like, oh my goodness, even Catholics, a lot of Catholics don't even either believe in the real presence or even understand what the church is talking about when they say real presence. So it's
By the
like,
way, did you see the study that Vinea Research did kind of in response to that? It didn't get a lot of traction because they released it right around the time of the Eucharistic Summit, but honestly, it was really good. Basically, what they found was, no, a lot of Catholics do believe in the true presence, but sorry, Pew, the way you phrased your questions made it seem like people don't believe because, you know, it was a phrase. So they found that it was a phrasing problem.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what I mean is like, they'll say, yes, I believe in the real presence, but their understanding of the real presence is that it's like a symbol still. It's not really that Jesus is truly present, you know, body, soul, blood, and divinity and everything. So yeah, I did see that. I thought that was Kara that had done that follow up to the Pew research, but
they might have done one as well, but I know Vinea published one.
Yeah, the language is so important. But yeah, I'd say, I think the questions that we're continuing to ask ourselves in regard to the Eucharist is, you know, how do we help others, but also ourselves? Because there's, you know, even like a fuller devotion to who is it that is in the Eucharist? How do I recognize who is in the Eucharist? It's person, right? It's Jesus. And so I think there is an element of teaching. I think teaching masses are really cool when people have the opportunity to, you know, actually be, this is what's happening now and this is what's happening. So I do believe that there is an element of, you know, information and instruction and sort of formation that's really, really important. But oftentimes we tend to leave it there and we forget about our need for encounter. You know, it's one thing to read an autobiography or a biography or for me to tell you about this amazing friend I have. It's another thing for you to encounter the friend, you know, see how funny they are, see how wonderful. And I think that's the longing that people have and they can discover once, you know, our eyes are open to recognize who's there with us present, is that it's not so much about saying like, hey, tell me that God loves me. It's experiencing the love of God. It's not saying, hey, can you teach me about the mercy of God? It's an encounter with God's mercy and it makes all the difference. So I think it's learning, yes, but it's encounter is really key in giving people, you know, opportunities for encounter.
Have you ever given a teaching mass, John?
Yes, I have. I find them to be very effective. In fact, I do a teaching mass when I do pre-cana. A part of working with people preparing for marriage is that we have mass together, and I kind of use it as a teaching mass because so many people who are getting married in the church, I mean, I'm so happy that they decided to get married in the church, and yet, you know, their knowledge of really just a lot of church ritual is not that robust. So, and I'm not saying that in any other derogatory way, but it's a great opportunity because I think they're so excited to get an insight into what it is they decide to do, which is to get married in the church. So in that context, it's worked out great. Of course, I've used teaching masses for people in RCIA coming into the church. And as a teacher at a high school, I've used teaching masses with students. So I've done it in lots of different contexts. They've always been fun. I enjoy doing it. I feel like it pushes me to even be more present to things happening in the liturgy. So it's great.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Monica centered kind of around welcoming and belonging and ultimately experience, right? The encounter with the person. And that's what we've been talking about, you know, getting out of the head and getting into the heart. You know, don't learn about someone, meet them. That's what's been so effective in my own life. Meeting you, for example, it seems like the saints are a great way in to the Lord, and they are, but necessarily the saints are dead. You can't have it's not a very two-way street. I mean, yes, there's prayer, and I'm not whatever relationship you have with a saint, that's great. But a real person can draw you into the Lord, I think, in a way that reading about someone or even prayer can't really do. There's a reason that we're called to love one another as we love ourselves and love God, right? This communion is unity with God. We are able to live heaven now if we can do this stuff. And like someone who believes in evangelization strongly enough that they are talking about it, using the term, then they must be desiring that relationship for the other person. But I think oftentimes it doesn't. Do you think it's the fact that the person is starting so far down the path that it's hard to imagine what would be the helpful for someone way earlier on the path because they're just imagining themselves and everyone's very different? You know, where's the disconnect happening between these people that it feels like there's just an agenda that you're their project and it's time to evangelize you?
I think it's, if we're going to use the word evangelization, I think the person who feels called to evangelize needs to also equally feel called to be evangelized by the person they are trying to evangelize.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Totally.
I mean, you know, and because you said it, like, it's all about encountering the person that help you to understand who the person Jesus is. I mean, there's nothing more incarnational about that. I mean, clearly, before there was anything written down about Jesus, all we had were people encountering other people, and that's how they understood who the person of Jesus is, what we roughly always call the oral tradition. I mean, that was very person-centric and often one person at a time. So that's really how things began. And it began with the person of Jesus encountering persons, right? So it's all very person-centric. The same thing would apply today. Like, if you feel so propelled and called to talk about who Jesus is and how Jesus has been working in your own life, you have to have the same confidence that Jesus is already working in other people's lives, whether they know it or not. Mm-hmm. And the person who's evangelizing is seeking that in the other person. It's not really seeking to give them something as much as to affirm something that is. And for the person who is evangelizing, to be evangelized by how God is showing up already, how the person of Jesus is already showing up.
Which is exactly what we were talking about last episode with spiritual direction, right? You're just trying to notice how is God working in your life. So why wouldn't you also be trying to notice that in someone else's life, right?
Exactly. I mean, and that it has to really be at that radical level. I often like to say that Christ is everything or nothing. So if anyone is alive, they're already an incarnation of the very reality of God. There's not certain people who have it and other people don't have it. It's not defined by baptism or any other type of ritual. It just simply is. And we have to have that as a starting point. I think when I talk about pre-evangelization, I think that's where it lies. It's like, we start the point like, all right, everyone is a walking Christ already. So what are we doing to honor and reverence the walking Christ in our midst? And by doing that, actually, they themselves, who may not even know who the person Jesus is, may start to realize something about themselves, which then in turn make them realize something greater than themselves too.
Now let's listen to the conversation where we spoke with Emily Ricci, the founder and CEO of Gloriam Marketing. Emily has experience in helping parishes and Catholic businesses spread their message. And in their own words, Catholic marketing is another term for evangelization. We spoke with her about some of the obstacles her company has helped people overcome.
So talk about some of the biggest obstacles you've had in your work, the different clients or parishes that you've worked with. What are some of the big obstacles or the things that just really end up kind of preventing you from going to the next level?
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, overall, there's resistance to change. I'm starting to see more parishes, which I love, having actual dedicated people doing their communications. That's fantastic. But that's not even by far a majority. Most parishes, it's the person who's doing the bulletin is also the person who's doing the mass intentions, who may also be the faith formation director, right? And so people are wearing way too many hats. They don't have enough time, or maybe the time to train or the skills to be able to grow in this area. And I, in some senses, get it. If you have a hole in the roof of the parish, that's got to get fixed before you're worrying about your marketing, right? So marketing typically tends to come towards the bottom, but it's also the thing that's going to help you to get money to pay for the hole in the roof, right? Mm-hmm. And so it ends up kind of sinking to the bottom of the to-do list when it's, it is a really important thing to do. So I think the things that I run into: lack of time, lack of skills, lack of finances. Those are really the big things. And so what I try to do is I try to come in and for like the little time that you have, what are the small fixes that you can make that are going to have the biggest impact on that? Because again, unless you have a dedicated communications coordinator, a lot of the things that are really going to help move the needle are just going to be too much time. But everybody can do small, simple little things. If you're already putting out a Christmas Mass poster, you can add a line that's a bit more evangelistic in nature versus just having the same Christmas Mass poster that you've used every year, right? So there's small tweaks like that that you can make to start to see some bigger impacts.
Recognizing that almost no parish has a communications professional, let alone a marketing professional, and recognizing that, you know, many parishes will have a faith formation person who's usually a DRE or something like that, but probably not an evangelization role by name or even by discipline. Is it worth, or do you try to involve the faith formation person or whoever's kind of in charge of evangelization when you engage for a marketing campaign with a parish? Do you try to bring them in given that you feel the nature of marketing is evangelization?
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, I've actually seen a really large crossover between faith formation and communications. Like there are a lot of parishes where the person who is in charge of faith formation might not be doing the bulletin, but is probably in charge of their email newsletter or something like that for the most part, or youth ministers. Youth ministers too sometimes tend to be involved in that, especially because stereotypically your youth minister tends to be on the younger side, probably more experienced with technology. And so the staff goes, oh, you know how to email. And meanwhile, you know, they're on TikTok, but you know how to email. And so I do see a lot of crossover between those two. There was one parish that was, they were advertising for a digital evangelization specialist, which I just thought was such an interesting way to kind of cross those two roles of somebody who's really evangelization focused, but has the digital media experience.
Do you think that what parishes perceive to be their issues with evangelization are in fact their issues with evangelization?
No, they're typically very different. They're very different. And I think, unfortunately, there are parishes that are doing really well just authentically in being a very active, vibrant community. And then there are parishes that want to really evangelize, but then you don't necessarily have something there for people when they're interested in learning more, right? Yeah. And so it's really the parish that's going to be in the best spot to evangelize is the parish that's already active and vibrant. Because frankly, the staff is already doing a lot. You need to engage your people in the pews to do the evangelization work for you, right?
Product before promotion.
Yes. Yep. And so your current people, you need to teach them how to evangelize and you need to give them the tools to do it well, right? Mm-hmm. And so in order to do that, you need to have people that are ready to evangelize. And so there's kind of multiple layers there.
We saw that about 3/4 of mass attending Catholics are interested in furthering their formation skills for evangelization purposes. Do you feel like that's representative of what you see too?
Yeah, absolutely. People want to, we just have no idea how to. That's not something that most of us were taught how to do in faith formation. We could probably tell you a lot about the history of the church and, you know, how to say the rosary and those kinds of things, but actually relating to people really is a whole different avenue.
Like Dave was saying, product before promotion, that's something I'm just really curious to hear more about specific examples of that in your work. Like, how did you strengthen the product? Because I feel like there's not enough attention given to the product. People don't know what it is they're actually promoting, why they're promoting it. What I said earlier. What do you do to kind of really work with the client to say, do you really know what you're about? And do you really believe in this stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the real question I have. I mean, there seems to always be this general idea like, well, church is a good thing, mass is a good thing, we should all be doing these things. But like, I don't think there's enough really articulation as to what is the impact of these things. Like, why should I be spending my time on Sunday going to church? Like, I don't think there's a very good answer other than like, well, you should just do that because it's good to have a rhythm and ritual and all. Like, right. That doesn't sell. It doesn't convince me even, actually, to tell you the truth. So right. like right. What is it that, yeah. you know, like what's that process look like?
Well, I think this is where I actually kind of have the crossover. So I also have a lot of small business clients. These are just lay Catholics who are running Catholic ministries and businesses. You know, I have everything from moms who are running Etsy shops at night to, you know, Catholic, you know, specific organizations with teams. And I feel like the lay Catholic ministry, lay Catholic apostolates, they're trying to do some of that work. I think that the parishes maybe don't have the time or understand that they need to do. So I have three clients in particular who are all working on things about explaining the mass and doing this in a way that is engaging and answers that question of why should you go to mass? And so what I would love to see more of is, and you're actually kind of making me think about this as you're saying that, is that, you know, I have a lot of parishes that I talk to and I have a lot of lay people. And really, you know, even if you don't have this in your parish, there are people out there that are doing this work. And if you don't have the time, could you bring in a speaker? Could you bring in somebody who's written a book or done a course that might be able to answer some of those questions? But to speak to the question you're asking specifically about how do I work with a client on that, I try to tread very carefully because we all feel really passionate about the great things that we're doing. And to be honest, a lot of my clients have not been looking at how do I get more people to mass. It's been events. How do I get more people to come to events? That typically tends to be the bigger question. And the events that they're doing are like they're solid. Like if people would actually show up, I think they would get something out of it. But again, we default to, I'll use Bible study as an example, because most parishes probably have a Bible study of, oh, the women's Bible study is meeting on Thursday in this meeting room, and here's the time, and, you know, bring coffee. Right? Mm-hmm. It's not giving me anything about why I should go to that or what the transformation in my life is going to be. And a really simple way that I wish more parishes would do is just ask your people, like ask the people who are in the ministry, what did you get out of it? Like it doesn't have to be anything all that complicated, but then use that either as a straight up testimonial or use that language that they're using in your communication for it. So if five people tell you that this Bible study was life-changing, we're going to use the word life-changing in it, right? Mm-hmm. If five people tell you, and again, I'm assuming, like, so if you have seven people and five people tell you this, right? That, mm-hmm. Why didn't nobody ever tell me this? Why I didn't know this about the Bible? I learned to pray more, whatever language they're using, use that language then to reflect back to try to get more people, right? And we're just flipping that to, are you looking for this thing, right? Whatever that feeling is that it's inspired. And now we're reflecting that back and we're showing how the product is the solution to that problem. But typically what we do is we just focus on what and where, right? Mm-hmm. And not the really key piece of why and how.
I should probably mention that I've been doing marketing myself for most of my career. So when I'm talking product and promotion, maybe I got a little marketing speak there. Me and Emily were geeking out. But I think, like, you know, one of the things that really stuck out to me as I listened back to our conversation is we sort of were talking about almost like the business of evangelization, if you want, right? Like we went from talking about, you know, with Monica, we're talking about the individual. Now with Emily, we're talking about how does she help parishes who as a whole are trying to do this work of evangelization. And what I realize is in order to do it well, you need to recognize that what you're really trying to do is replicate word of mouth and generate word of mouth. Whatever techniques that a parish might deploy that might be grander in some way, scale, you know, usage, whatever, compared to an individual, it's got to come back to that or it's not really going to work. In a similar way, the other thing I'll compare kind of parishes to individuals is just as with a person, a parish has to start with the inner work. That's kind of something that Emily was saying without saying those exact terms. I remember I got to go to an amazing parish conference many years ago. And the thing that they start with, they say, look, you have to get your core team. First of all, you have to define who your core team is, right? Those kind of few staff members, the pastor and whoever else is kind of immediately surrounding him. And they need to be praying together and they need to be getting along and working well together. And there's no way you're going to convince someone that the Lord is at work in their lives in these ways. And I can tell if it's not obvious that the Lord is at work in their lives first, right? So it's got to be the core team, and then it's got to be other people who work for the parish. And then you can start to kind of bring other people at the parish along. So in a similar way, you know, someone who doesn't have, you know, some kind of active relationship with God is not going to come off as authentic when they speak about that type of thing with others.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right, Dave. I think that could mean a lot of things though, to a lot of different people. Like, what does it mean to have an active relationship with the Lord? It's interesting. I get back to what we were talking about earlier. I mean, are we looking for people who just talk about Jesus a lot? Like, is that indicative of an active relationship with the Lord? I just feel like I have a little bit more of an expansive look at it anymore. It's just like, if someone is just striving to look at things in their life as having just deeper meanings or motivations to help them to understand their inner passions or desires, or like, I mean, I feel like that's a very active relationship with the Lord, so to speak. I don't know if they call it that or not. I mean, this is where the whole evangelization thing, I think, becomes kind of, I don't know, just becomes a little confusing, because are we just saying when people explicitly start talking about Jesus and connecting things to Jesus, that that's sign that they have some type of engaging relationship with God, and that the evangelization efforts seek to cultivate people to do the similar things where they are just actively talking about Jesus? I mean, I'm not trying to like downplay any of that, because of course that's really an important thing.
Coming back to the idea of the product, this is often so much of the issue, right? A few years ago, I was getting a haircut, and it was kind of a weird situation. The hairdresser was cutting my hair, but then there was like another hairdresser that apparently didn't have any clients who was like doing all the talking to me at the same time. And so I was talking to that person, and she was saying how she used to be Catholic, but now she goes to a Protestant church nearby. And I said, that's cool. And she was like, yeah, it's all right. You know, it's like, you know, it's a COVID kind of thing. And we just kept going. And I wanted to invite her into something at the parish, because it sounded like there was a yearning somewhere in there of the Catholic Church that she had once been a part of. I myself was in the process of trying to find a different parish to go to, because I really couldn't stand my home parish that this salon was near. And I didn't know of any other things to invite her to either. I was not aware of any small groups that were meaningful in my area. And that's largely still the case too. I can think of something now, thankfully, because I've been around here a little longer now. Like, what we invite someone into, if you know that it kind of sucks, like, why would you invite someone into that? And doesn't our experience at church kind of suck a lot of the time?
Yeah, I think that's just calling it out for what it is. I mean, those are things that we have to kind of really look at right now. I almost find that, like, if you want to think of a good model for church evangelization or anything like that, you got to go to 12-step programs, because I think that's the only place I can think of that's doing this well, because there is ritual involved. Everyone knows what to expect when you go in, at least from the standpoint that you're going to be heard, you're going to be seen. There's a vulnerability that's allowed. There's a desire for you to succeed, and there's a desire for companionship. All those things, they're accessible basically anywhere, anytime. The network is strong in that way. You don't need to have a lot of personal knowledge of who specifically is going to be there at all going into it. You look at something like that as like, wow, if there was only something like that happening within, let's say, the Catholic Church context, I just think that'd be very transformative.
Right.
But I don't even know if you have to even call it like a Catholic event at that point. I mean, it'd be nice to see that Catholics were taking that seriously. But once again, we just lean too hard into the things that we know we have, which are the sacraments, the liturgy, things like that. And I just think that that becomes a real big challenge, because that's not pre-evangelization necessarily.
Totally. I mean, two things. One, I want to give a shout out to Scott Wieman and his work in Catholic and Recovery, because that is the Catholic version of that. That's exactly what you're talking about. They have chapters all over the country. We had him on our webinar and he does really great work. So catholicandrecovery.org, I want to send people there. It'll be in the show notes. The other thing I want to say is, like, if I am not, you know, a 12-stepper myself, how insane would it have been for me to invite this hairdresser into a 12-step program? She hasn't even mentioned, you know, any kind of issue that she's having. And can you imagine if I was like, you know, I haven't done it and you haven't even mentioned an issue, but I think you should be in a 12-step program. Like, so that's what I mean by, you know, doing the inner work first. Like, it has to be coming from a place of authenticity. Last but certainly not least, we spoke with Peter Andrastic, a senior consultant at the Evangelical Catholic, who has been working in adult faith formation in the church for over 20 years. The Evangelical Catholic works in establishing faith communities from college campuses to military bases. We spoke with Peter about some of the ways people can develop skills related to sharing the faith.
You know, in our post-Christian culture, there's a lot of loneliness, there's a lot of isolation, there's a lot of anxiety. And when you're around a person who doesn't seem to be lonely, doesn't seem to be anxious, doesn't seem to live a life of alienation and whatnot, they exude peace and joy. It's attractive. It appeals to everyone's desire for happiness. Somehow on the outside, nothing is different with his life than my life, but somehow everything about his life is different. What is that? What's going on there? What's going on in his life? That's the power of like a love transformed life that radiates. And now is when this person needs, I don't know, the courage and the gentleness and the tenacity and the words to be able to speak into that. This is what you call like maybe like the apologetics of meaning, right? So why do you live this way? What's up with your life? You know, or maybe they might not ask those questions. Maybe they just might come to you and ask for professional advice or something like that. But over time, that professional advice, because you're always giving good, consistent professional advice, maybe that turns into more personal advice and turns into a relationship.
In our study on discipleship, we asked Mass attending Catholics in the U.S. how they felt about, you know, the skills they maybe lacked related to sharing their faith with others. Would you say that it's maybe not even about the skills so much as just how they're living their life in general, that's what's lacking. And that it's just that it's not leading them into an organic relationship with others, which is maybe then the context for that faith sharing?
Yes. Okay. So while skills and techniques can be really helpful and are important, we have developed so much human wisdom and excellence that it would be a shame to not try to utilize it. But I would say that the skills and the trainings and the workshops are very secondary to holiness. They have to be within the context of personal holiness. Because if we reduce evangelization to something you can just train someone for, just a set of skills or a technique for saying something, we reduce evangelization to the manipulation of human techniques. And that kind of strips the church, that strips evangelization of its supernatural aim and of its supernatural power. I don't know if it's one of the Psalms says something like, you know, it's like putting our trust in horses and chariots and charioteers. A well-made chariot and a strong horse is helpful. but we don't put our trust, our faith in that.
Right.
Solely.
If you don't have conversational skills, your relationship is going to suffer in other ways, regardless of if you're trying to evangelize, right?
Totally.
So there's table stakes, but then there's also something more.
Yeah. And there's even a sense in which, you know, a lot of the skills and things are just a matter of human formation. You know, I work with a lot of seminarians, and one of the things that we'll kind of jokingly, one of our mantras that we'll jokingly kind of shoot out there is don't be weird, right? Like, you know, your character, your personality, this is human formation. Your character, your personality can either facilitate or be an impediment to the spreading of the gospel. And so those skills and whatnot are important. But I think the temptation is to put too much emphasis on trainings and workshops and skills as if you can just train people up into zeal. as if a worldly life can be made up for with a slick negotiation skill or the ability to like say the kerygma or lead a small group in a fun way.
I like Peter's phrase of a love transformed life, which I feel like is another way of Pope Francis's joy of the gospel. That I think was the big takeaway for me for what he was saying is that is attractive, right? And I know exactly what he's talking about. I can think of faithful people who it just doesn't seem to matter what happens. Joy pervades, even when bad things are kind of making life sort of suck.
Yeah, I mean, that's really at the core of it. The good news is that there's nothing that could ever take us away from the very gift of life, because we have it in the here and now, and we will have it for all of eternity. So no matter how bad it gets, no matter how much stuff is thrown at us, nothing of that's evil has the last word. And that is cause for joy, even in the midst of sorrow. And that doesn't spiritually bypass what's happening in the moment. It just puts it in a deeper type of perspective. And it really helps us to kind of push through what we're going through, not just to get to a place where there is no suffering, but to be able to see that within the suffering, there is cause for joy. That is the good news, that as close as suffering is to us, joy is equally as close.
The other thing I think that's attractive about that approach, it's silly to call it, my approach is to be joyful throughout my life, but you know, is it ends up being a pull mechanism rather than a push mechanism, to use kind of technological terms, right? I'm not saying never strike up a conversation about faith with people, but I am saying that people are pretty wary of that kind of stuff, and they can smell an agenda like poop on a shoe. And so, you know, to be able to turn it around and get people wondering, well, what is going on with that person, is pretty profound, I think, in today's age.
Definitely. I was also happy that he was talking about how, like, you know, if we reduce evangelization to something you can just train someone for, we reduce it to manipulation of human technique, you know, and it strips, and he says here, it strips the church, it strips evangelization of its supernatural aim and supernatural power. I would love for him to have unpacked that a little bit more and what that meant to him. And, you know, he was kind of getting at it, but I think that there's nothing more true than that. I mean, there is no ready-made way to evangelize, which I think is, once again, why I'm reluctant to talk about it, because we always think like there's going to be these amazing little things that you say or do that are just automatically going to make people click, you know, to something. And it's like, I think in this way, it's really allowing the person in front of you to take the lead rather than you thinking that you need to even start the process. And how attentive are we to the people around us? Because how much are we captivated by how God's already working in their life? And that makes us, quote unquote, who are evangelizers, to be drawn more to them. And I think maybe you're using that push and pull thing. How are we allowing other people to pull us into their world, so to speak, right? I think that's another way of looking at it too. I'm not just trying to pull you into my world, but how are we allowing ourselves to be pulled into theirs?
All right. That concludes this episode of Religion to Reality. We hope you learned as much as we did from these conversations and that you might be walking away with a new perspective on evangelization. Thank you again to our guests, Monica Martinez, Emily Ricci, and Peter Andrastek. You can find Hallo at hallo.com. Glorium Marketing is at gloriummarketing.com. That's GLORIAM marketing.com. And the Evangelical Catholic can be found at evangelicalcatholic.net. Please join us again next week, where we'll be taking a look at the corporal and spiritual works of mercy, from our own understanding to how we can better live them out. Once again, I'm your host, Dave Plisky, joined by my friend and co-host, Father John Grbovich. We hope to see you again next week. Religion to Reality is an initiative of DeSales Media, created by me, Dave Plisky, and is produced and edited by Connor Donnelly. If you found value in our conversation, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If you love the show, ratings and reviews go a long way toward letting others know about the show. Go to religiontoreality.org for more details and resources. And if you are ready to take the next step and join in community with us, check out the Called Learning Community, co-founded by Father John Grbovich. go to calledcommunity.com to sign up for our free online gatherings.